Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms and gardens of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. And in the studio with me today is our sound engineer, Katie Claiborne. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Teresa.
And we also have Joanne Rideout running the board for us. And so here's the deal. I thought that KMUN's pledge drive started today. And so I was totally fired up to do this like garden question, farm question show. And then we would pitch for KMUN and we would tell you like why Coast Community Radio is such a great thing to support. And it turns out that it starts tomorrow. So we're going to do some gentle kind of like, hey, so tomorrow you should really call in and pledge your support for Coast Community Radio. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about garden questions that come up this time of year. Katie's going to answer ask some questions that have come through over time. And for those of you that are friends of mine on Facebook, I did ask for some questions there, and I will start out with a question that we got from Mr. Brian Bovenizer, which says, "Dear In Season, why are baby goats so gosh darn cute?" And Katie, do you want to take that one? Because that just seems like something that you really dealt with a lot in one of our shows this year when we went to visit the Skamakaway Farmstead Creamery.
I did. Here's why they're so cute. Bellies. Yeah, really great bellies.
Yeah.
They're very curious and very friendly. So they come and they nibble on your boots and they nibble on your pants. And they also really like to be cuddled.
They do.
All of these things.
And they make great noises.
They make great noises.
I know. Baby goats.
It all adds up.
I know. I think that was one of my favorite shows.
Well, it is one of my favorite days of my life.
I know.
I had, I got to hold one really sweet little goat for probably an hour during the whole interview.
This is true. Yeah, I know. I think it's interesting. Some of the shows that we do. So Katie, when we go out and do remote recordings, we try to visit farms and gardens throughout the region. And I go out and do all this recording and make all the sounds and interview and all of this. And then I bring this back to Katie and I hand it to her. And she looks at me and says, mm-hmm, and then listens to it. And then she somehow puts it together with her sound editing skills and makes it into some kind of a cohesive show. And I honestly just want to say thank you to KMUN for letting us explore this option and learn how to do this together, because it's really kind of cool and it's fun to have that opportunity to go out and do that.
Absolutely. And we've learned so much.
We have learned so much. And I think it really kind of allows us to report more on a wider range of things going on in the listening area of Coast Community Radio, because not everyone can come into the studio for a live show.
Absolutely. And it really, the experience is quite different when you go out and you're on that farm, you're surrounded by 50 baby goats, you know? It just means a lot more.
It is a very different interview, I will say that. So we talk a lot about farming and gardening on this show, and it's interesting, like as I'm out and about in the community, there are so many questions that come up all the time. And I think what's interesting, and I'm thinking about it today, we're sitting here, it's an extremely hot day. If you just listened to Joanne's weather advisory, you'll know that fires are burning all over Oregon. The weather has been crazy. I mean, I feel like we went from this very, very cold, wet spring and early summer to this blistering hot time now. Yeah. And there's a lot of like, how do I handle this? And I think what's interesting is like out here in these coastal environments, we're used to dealing with cold and wet. That's usually the problem that people have here. Hot and dry are not usually the crisis questions people are asking about plants. And so, I mean, I've definitely been getting some of those. And I wrote some down for you. So Katie, what are some of the questions that have been coming to us recently?
Well, Teresa.
Katie.
Why do plants get so limp when it's hot? And what should I do? Should I just, does it automatically mean that they're just really, really thirsty and I should just give them a bunch of water? What do we do, Teresa?
Well, you really notice this right now, and I've been seeing this on our farm, especially with our squash plants and our bean plants. In those days, it's been hitting 90-plus degrees, and the leaves, in the heat of the day, the leaves just go limp, and the plants look miserable. They look like they're dying. It looks terrible. And part of it is that the plants are overheating. They're respirating. They respirate moisture out of their leaves, and they're better at absorbing moisture through their leaves. They're not good at holding it in. And what happens is when they get so limp like that, it does mean that they're stressed. They're experiencing heat stress. It doesn't always mean that they need a ton of water. If you've been watering pretty regularly, they might have enough moisture in the soil. It's just that they're so stressed out from the heat. If you can imagine you standing outside in 95 degree weather with no sunscreen on, no protective clothing, you would start to feel a little bit limp too and want to get in the shade. And you can walk over and be in the shade, but the plants can't. So the first thing you should do before you water is check the soil and like get a small trowel or a digging knife or something and dig down there and see if there actually is moisture in the soil. And if there is, then just take a deep breath and let them ride it out, because in the evening they should perk up again and look okay. And
so if it's how deep are we talking here?
I would say like go about a foot down. I mean, you kind of want to go down to where their roots are. I mean, don't just look in that top inch, but go down a little bit and check and see. If you're talking about lettuce plants or plants that have a very shallow root and that top couple of inches are dry, then definitely add some water. If it's a more deep-rooted plant and there's moisture further down in the soil, and it seems adequate, especially if this soil is, like if you press it together and it feels moist, try and hold off and let's see how the plants do in the evening. And if they're still really look sad in the evening, you could water them again then. And when you do water them, try and water them at the base of the plant, especially if you're trying to water them in the middle of the day. If you're like, oh my God, it's bone dry, I've really got to water. Don't just water the leaves. Get your hose in there and water at the base of the plant and really make sure it's getting into the soil. It's scary. It's hard to watch your plants go through that. But, and if it's a container plant, try and move it into the shade if you can, you know, or drape some shade cloth over it or something to create some shade.
Yeah.
Ugh, I know. It's hard. It's so scary to see that happen to your garden.
Not just watching them die and doing nothing about it.
Well, it's an option too. It could also just be like, hey, it's the end of the year. I'm just giving up. And, you know, walk away. I couldn't do that, but, you know, some people might. I don't know. What's next?
Okay, let's see. I feel like I want to find the best follow-up to that. Oh, Teresa.
Katie.
Something is eating my kale. What is it? What can I do?
The kale. Okay, I know we've talked about this before, but I feel like it bears repeating. I get asked this all the time. Kale, and I think it's just because we grow so much kale out here that you noticed it mostly on your kale, but it happens on all of the plants in that family, the brassica family. It's probably cabbage moth caterpillars. And if you've noticed around, there's these little white moths that are flying everywhere. And they are cabbage moths, and they love everything in that family, and they lay their eggs on the leaves. And if you look on the underside of the leaves, there'll usually be like a little cluster of tiny yellow eggs. They're like a pinhead size. And those little tiny eggs turn into these caterpillars that are green. They're the same green as the leaves, and they are just voracious, and they can strip a kale plant down, I feel like, in a night. They're almost like slugs.
And they're hard to see.
And they are hard to see because they're the same color as the leaf.
Yep.
So you've really got to go out and look. I would say that, you know, if you don't have that many plants, probably the best way to deal with them is to just hand pick them. You can pick them off and drop them in a bucket of soapy water. Squishing them is preferable. They squish really easily. It's kind of gross, but, you know.
Maybe satisfying.
It is very satisfying. I can do this barehanded now. I just, seriously, I hate those things so much. When I see them, I'm just like, squish. But just like, stay vigilant. There are some organic spray. There's an organic spray you can use. It's called BT, Bacillus thuringiensis. You can usually get it someplace that sells organic garden supplies. I would use it sparingly because it goes after caterpillars, but it goes after, so it's like a narrow spectrum. It only goes after caterpillars, but it goes after all caterpillars. So it will not only deal with the cabbage moth ones, but it'll also kill your, you know, swallowtail butterfly caterpillars or whatever. So if you're going to go that route, just be really careful in how you use it and really follow directions.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. You don't want to kill the caterpillars.
Yeah.
Well, not the swallowtail butterflies. I know.
You definitely don't want to kill
them.
No. They're wonderful. Are you ready for another question?
I'm totally ready.
Okay. Teresa.
Katie.
What is cover crop and why should I grow it?
Cover crop. I get a lot of questions about that this time of year. And it's because a lot of times in the fall, what you'll see farmers doing is, and you'll hear it out there, cover crop, sow your cover crop, get your cover crop seeds. Cover crop is also known as green manure. And it's a way of kind of growing your own compost. And it helps hold the soil, it prevents soil erosion, it helps build nutrients in the soil. So as you're clearing out your garden beds, plants are starting to die, certain crops are starting starting to finish up, and if you're not planning to do a fall or winter garden, you don't want to leave that soil bare, because when the rains come, which I have to believe they are going to come back again someday, the rain can really impact the soil. It'll cause compaction by hitting the soil really hard, and it can wash soil away. It can erode the soil with a really heavy rainfall. And so there's a couple of ways you can deal with that. You can put out a really heavy mulch, like a heavy layer of compost or straw or something like that, to reduce the impact. But you can also grow cover crop. And cover crop, there's a lot of different things that people use. There's, you know, winter rye and vetch and crimson clover. And sometimes you can get blends of cover crop. Sometimes people just use like a single variety, depending on what they like. But you sow it starting around this time of year, and then the plants germinate and they grow into this kind of lush, thick cover of green organic material that holds the roots hold the soil in place. And if you incorporate some legumes, like, you know, the clover or vetch or things like that, or some people do winter peas, then those can help fix nitrogen in the soil, and so store nitrogen. And then in the late winter or spring, what you do is you cut that cover crop down and you dig it in and you allow it to break down in the soil. And it's like basically adding compost to your soil in the spring. So you're growing your own compost and then you're cutting it down and you're letting it break down. What we do a lot of times is at the farm, because we've got a lot of area that we're doing this in, is we'll cut the cover crop down and then put a layer of compost on top of it to kind of bury it, and then cover that area with a black plastic tarp, which really helps accelerate the breaking down. It helps to warm up the soil as well and helps to kind of keep the rain off it so that it dries out.
This is like early spring?
Early spring. I usually do this about a month to a month and a half before I want to plant in that area. So you've got to kind of think ahead and say, if I want to start setting out plant starts in early April, then I need to do this maybe mid-February.
Okay.
So mid-February or beginning of March. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, you pull your tarps off and you have a really great kind of most of the organic material should have been broken down and incorporated into the soil. Your worms and other little microorganisms in the soil are going to be breaking it down and working it up. And I certainly have noticed a difference in the beds where I've used cover crop in the fall and then dug it in the spring, versus beds where either I was really bad and just kind of left it bare, because sometimes I do that, or maybe I put a layer of compost out, but, you know, I didn't really put that much out, or I didn't do enough. It really makes a difference. It's amazing the response from the plants in the spring, because there's all this food in the soil that they can then access when their roots start to grow. So it's a really good thing to think about. You can you can order cover crop online. You can look in local garden stores. Ask around. If they aren't carrying it, then they really should be, because it's a great way to deal with soil erosion and to build your soil. And it's pretty cost effective, you know, and it's much easier than hauling in bags and bags and bags of compost in the spring. Yeah. So grow your own. It's a really good way of doing it.
Do you have a favorite cover crop?
You know, I usually use a mix, and it's interesting. There was a discussion online recently, and I'm embarrassed that I don't remember. A really great farmer down in Nesco and Carolina Lees from Corvus Landing Farm had posted a question to a bunch of small farmers about, what's your favorite cover crop? She was kind of looking to maybe mix up her blend. And of course, I'm saying this now, and I don't remember what she said, and I don't remember what anyone else said. I have a farm supply store in Portland, Naomi's Organic Farm Supply, that I sometimes go and get their soil. They have like a soil builder blend. And I've been using that for the last few years. And I even forget what all's in it. But it's just, you know, I know there's like a rye and a vetch and triticale and other stuff, like crimson clover a bit and some other things, because I've just been really trying to build my soil, especially when I know that what I'm going to be planting into it are heavy feeders like brassicas, like mm-hmm. kale and Brussels sprouts or broccoli, things that really leach a lot of nutrients out of the soil. But if you know that's what you're going to be growing in that area, really work on building the soil now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you do that planting immediately after you pull out your
ideally
your
as soon
crops.
As you finish pulling out the crops and you know that bed's going to be bare, I would just give it a really good weeding first, you know, try and get out all the weeds that might go to seed over the winter, you know, work it up, maybe add some lime, you know, because lime is also a good thing to add in the fall, and it'll break down over the course of the season. And then sow your cover crop seed, cover it lightly with mulch. And I mean, ideally it would then rain, and that would be the thing that helps the seeds germinate. But you might have to do some watering,
sure,
depending on stuff like that. I'm just looking at the time, Katie, and I'm noticing that we should probably do a little break and remind people that they're listening to Coast Community Radio on KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook at 89.5 FM. And we're streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to In Season. We talk about farming and gardening in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. And I'm here with my sound engineer, Katie Claiborne, who edits our remote shows and puts in all the great animal noises that you guys mostly love so much. Sometimes think are a little weird, but that's okay. Like, and also Joanne Rideout, running the boards, who's being very quiet because she's not feeling the best today.
Well, I'm also just trying to keep my black thumb energy out of the conversation.
You do not, Joanne, you do not have a black thumb. I don't think there is such a thing as a black thumb.
I think I'm just really just too busy and scattered.
Yeah.
So I love listening
you have
to what
busy
you're
thumbs.
All saying. Yes, that's it.
You have
it.
Busy thumbs that are
that
not black.
Much better than, you know, killer plant person.
No, you're a plant neglector, perhaps.
I am, I know.
Which, okay, so that brings me to, I know there's a question out there and you're looking at me like you know which one I want you to ask.
Well,
because I've had this.
I think I do.
The one about the I went on vacation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I was on vacation. My house sitter didn't water my potted plants enough. What can I do, Teresa?
Oh, man. It's so painful when. Yeah.
I just feel like I need to make sure and say I was just gone for a month and my house. The people in my house did a wonderful job. This is not my question.
This is true.
Asking for a friend.
So sometimes when we go away and we have someone water our plants for us, sometimes they do a great job, as mm-hmm. Katie's mm-hmm. house sitters did. Mm-hmm. And sometimes maybe they're not as vigilant as you might have wanted them to be. And it's hard, especially if you have container plants. It's really and if the person who's watering your plants isn't maybe a serious gardener or doesn't really know or is very busy or maybe forgets. Many things can happen. But what can happen sometimes is you come back and especially your container plants are looking sad and limp and very dry. And that can be really challenging because once a potted plant gets dry, it's really hard to get that soil wet again. So there's a couple of things you can do. Just know that when a plant dries out in a container, the soil shrinks a little bit, and it can create a gap in between the ball of soil and the pot.
I've seen this.
Yes, you have. And so when you water it, and then the surface of the soil, it's so dry, it kind of repels water. Mm-hmm. So you water it really hard, and then suddenly, and there's all this water rushing out the bottom of the pot. And it's easy to think that, okay, it's watered, because all the water's running out the bottom of the pot. But if you actually lifted up that pot, you would notice it's still very dry. Because the water is just kind of like hitting the surface and maybe a little bit's absorbing, but it's mostly running off down the sides. So what you can do, if it's not a very big container, if it's a small enough container, you can get a larger bucket of water and actually just immerse the whole pot, the whole dry plant in the water. And you'll notice all these air bubbles coming up out of the pot and just like kind of hold it under the water until the air bubbles stop. I know that sounds terrible, but seriously,
a little creepy if you
hold it, and then the air bubbles will just keep coming up. And then when they stop, you know, pull the plant out and let it drain really well. And what's happening is like all those air bubbles are like pockets in the soil root ball that are like getting pushed out by the water. They're getting displaced by the water. The water's moving in. So that's how you know that the water is actually penetrating the entire root ball. And so if it's a small enough pot. If it's a bigger container and you can't do that, what you can do is take a stick or some kind of implement and poke some holes in the surface of the pot and then water really slowly, let it absorb. Water really slowly, let it absorb. And the
triage,
yeah. I mean, you're just trying to kind of get the plant to reabsorb water. The other thing that people always talk about is to not use really, really cold water. Huh. Use room temperature water or lukewarm water. And it's, I think plants are similar to us, where there's like icy cold water can be a shock. Much like if you were kind of overheated and just jumped into a, like, snow melt, it knocks all the air out of you. I think plants have a similar reaction. So in all of the literature that I've read, And I, you know, I haven't necessarily done, you know, side-by-side comparison studies. So usually I'm just trying to get the plant hydrated as quickly as possible, but try to use, you know, more of a room temperature water rather than trying the coldest water you can, because the colder the water isn't necessarily going to help. You just want it, the plant to absorb the water again. You can also, if it's a container that has a tray, like a water catching tray, you can fill that with water and let the plant slowly absorb it up through the bottom of the pot. Just don't leave the plant sitting in water for hours and hours and hours, because plants can also drown. You can overwater a plant, and if you leave it sitting in water, like if you did the thing where you plunge the plant into water, but then and all the air bubbles come out, but then you left it sitting there for a couple
of
hours,
away.
That's not okay. Don't leave your plant in the water.
Okay.
Unless it's a water plant, and then it's okay.
Are you ready? We have a listener question.
We do.
Just called in. It's
I'm
a
excited.
Fresh one.
All right.
Okay. Well, Teresa, this listener, their zucchini leaves have silver gray spots on them.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what this is?
Yeah, this is a powdery mildew. Powdery mildew starts this time of year in our region. And it really affects squash plants. And it's just because it's damp out. We've got cooler nights. There's dampness in the air, even though it hasn't rained. But you do get it. We have had a little bit of rain. And you get that when it gets damp and cool at night. And, you know, in some ways, I know I'm just kind of shaking my head. Well, the thing is, eventually, yes, it will kill the plant, but it's kind of heading towards the end of the plant's life cycle anyway. So, I mean, there are sprays out there that you could use for powdery mildew. It kind of depends on how much you want to fight with it. I would just say if you do make your own compost, don't put the plant into the compost pile unless you run a really hot compost pile and you're sure that you can kill any kind of, you know, pathogens or bacteria or anything like that in it. It happens. It happens here in our region. We just have, like, this time of year, September, October, you know, towards the end of the squash plant's life cycles, this is what happens. So just try not to overhead water. If you're overhead watering, that's probably adding to the problem. So if you are hand watering or use a sprinkler, try and switch to just watering at the base of the plant and try and keep the leaves as dry as possible. But the hard part is that just like evening moisture is also causing it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but it shouldn't affect the quality of the fruit unless the entire plant dies.
Okay.
And then it's dead.
Yeah, that would kind of do it.
On the coast. This is part of what happens in our area. So I am sorry. Powdery mildew land. We are powdery mildew land. Black spot on roses, man. You just kind of learn to love it out here.
Oh, yeah.
I know. You had a question about strawberries, didn't you?
I do have a question about strawberries. So I have a row of strawberries at my house that have been very successful this year.
I'm so excited for you.
And like I said, I was gone for a month and I came back and wow. They have really spread. So obviously I didn't cut the runners probably when would have been convenient. So what should I do now? And also, how long should strawberries be in a patch before they need to be moved?
Well, there's a couple issues going on with strawberries. So strawberries, their life cycle, I mean, growing them commercially, some farmers pull them out after a year. Some let them go for 2 years. After a couple of years, the main plant that you started with, people call that the mother plant, usually starts to decline in productivity. And it sends out these runners. And you may have noticed this if you grow strawberries. It's like a long string root or stem that comes out from the plant. And then a little tiny leaf cluster on it, you know, is out at the tip of that. And if that is hitting the ground, roots will form. And then that's a new strawberry plant. And you can very easily get a thicket of plants all over the place, which I imagine is what's happening. So what you want to do, if depending on how old your strawberry patch is, especially if it's like 2 years or older, a good thing to do is actually dig up those rooted runners. Make sure it's got a nice size root ball with it. Dig those up. And then you can dig out the mother plant, and that needs to go away. It's time for mom to pass away. She's done her job, and she's reproduced, and she's got all these little babies out there now. And then you want to replant with the new the new plants that have formed from the runners. What we do a lot of times is we try to cut the runners off during the season, because you want the plant during the growing and fruiting season to be focusing on reproducing fruit and not on reproducing itself. So cutting the runners off as you see them throughout the season, number one, will help keep your strawberry patch from becoming crazy. And we'll also focus on fruit production. And then if you want this time of year to let some of those runners go and reproduce, and then, you know, dig them up and dig out the old plant. I usually, when I dig out the old plants, I do try to move them to a new spot. Strawberries are another plant that, you know, they do become susceptible to some root diseases. And it's just good to rotate every once in a while. So if you can rotate them to a new area in your garden, to just a different row or a different section of your garden that still gets good sun, that's a great thing to do. If not, I mean, you can replant them in the same area until you really start to see signs of disease. But preferably, it's another thing to rotate. And then that gives you the opportunity of wherever you were growing your strawberries to plant something that is totally unrelated to that crop there. You know, that's where you can move your kale to or your squash plants or something, and let your whole garden get some new soil for that crop. But yeah, it's strawberries are tricky, man. They're so wonderful, but man, they can really catch you off guard.
Yeah.
And I did that last year. I didn't weed the runners out of a certain area, and I thought, oh yeah, I'll deal with that in the spring. I'll do that later. And it just became such a jungle that we finally had to dig the whole thing out and just throw everything away, because it was such a mess. And you couldn't even get in there to harvest. You couldn't tell where the berries were. And it can create, when you get that much leaf growth in your strawberry patch, and then there's moisture, it can create a lot of fungal diseases. Strawberries will rot, and then you get mold happening. So it's really good to keep your strawberry patch clean if you can. And so you got some digging ahead of you, Katie. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
It's you've got some plans. You've got some projects. I know.
You know, it goes with the, with the game.
It does. Do we have time for one more question, Joanne? What do you think?
Yeah, I think you do.
Okay, maybe one more question.
We'll just do a really quick, what are some good veggies to plant for the fall?
Fall, so you can definitely have a great fall and winter garden. Focus on hardy leafy greens and herbs. Things we like to grow in the fall are, of course, kale. Chard will usually last until some like serious hard frost or freezing, but chard, some of the Asian greens like Napa cabbage do really well this time of year. Arugula is a great one to grow. Mustard greens. There's some really quick growing Asian cabbages that are nice. And here's one that a lot of people don't think of as being a winter crop, but cilantro is actually a great quick growing herb to grow this time of year. It's actually very cold hardy, and I've had cilantro over winter on our farm a lot. So if you're a cilantro fan, that's a great thing to direct seed right now. And lettuce. Lettuce is another good thing to grow.
The cooler,
things that like cooler winter weather, you can do some direct seeding now and keep it watered, or you can look for transplants and get those in your garden. I would just say that wherever you're planting, give it a good layer of mulch, a good like top dressing of compost to help protect the soil from those that rain impact that's going to happen, especially if you're leaving your plants in the ground over the winter, like kale. Kale will give you that lovely late crop of flowering shoots, usually like in February and March, the kale rob. I look forward to that. So.
Was maybe my favorite thing that happened in my garden last year.
I know.
Nice surprise.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And I want you to remind you to call in starting tomorrow to Coast Community Radio and pledge your support for this awesome station. And thanks for joining us on In Season. Thanks Katie.
Thanks, Teresa.